conduct and prosecutorial misconduct cumulatively denied Mr. Pope a fair trial. His convictions must be reversed. And I would like to focus on the jury misconduct. The issue in determining whether these three instances of jury misconduct amount to jury misconduct is whether the investigation that the jury undertook resulted in new material information that Mr. Pope should have been and but was not able to answer. In determining whether a jury has committed misconduct, the question is whether the results of the experiment conform to the evidence presented at trial, the uncontroverted evidence presented at trial. So there are three instances of jury misconduct in this case. One, where the jurors conducted an experiment in the jury room with a mirror. Another, where a single juror went home and conducted an experiment at home in her car.
But you call these experiments, were they actually reenactments?
Reenactments, experiments, yeah.
Okay.
I'm kind of using the
You're not terms. Seeing a distinction there. So in reenactments are have been, at least the case law in this state, holds that they're not misconduct. Isn't that correct?
It depends on whether or not the reenactment conforms to the testimony. One case we're relying on, for example, is Cole v. McGee, where the jury went out to the scene. The court concluded this was a reenactment. The jurors were asked to walk through the parking lot and determine whether or not, and the plaintiff's allegation in that case was that he tripped over a guardrail, I believe it was. And so the jury went to the scene and conducted an experiment to determine whether they also would have tripped over the guardrail. And the court determined that was a reenactment, and that was improper because the jurors were looking for the guardrail, whereas the plaintiff was not. Similar in this case, when the jurors conducted the experiment with the mirror, they concluded that the witness must have been mistaken about the position of the two cars, but that experiment did not conform to the testimony. The witness testified. She identified the cars not by their position, but by the color, and also she said that one was in front of the other. They weren't side by side, and so the jurors concluded she must have been confused about their positioning, but in fact she said one was in front of the other, and the one in front blocked her view of the other car.
It sounds like your suggestion that there has to be sort of an exact replica of events as described by the witness in order for the...
It doesn't have to be exact, but it cannot differ in material respects. So some of the cases the state is relying on, for example, where the jury reenacted a struggle in the jury room and the jurors who participated in the struggle were not the exact height and weight of the people involved. These are non-material differences. The court concluded the jury could have used their own common sense to make sense of that. But in this case, there were material differences. The jury, the experiment did not, and for example, the experiment of the juror in the car at home, there were material differences in the circumstances of her experiment and Mr. Pope's testimony at trial. For example, there's no testimony that he was wearing a seat belt. It's not clear how accessible the gun was in the armrest. I mean, there's so many possibly different material circumstances in the juror's experiment versus the testimony presented.
So how does that differ from, like, I forget which case, I think it's Balasakis, where the guy was 300 pounds. I mean, how is he was a 300-pound guy trying to explain how he maneuvered in this struggle. There was nobody in the jury room that was 300 pounds. And you might, according to your argument, you would think that's a material difference, but the court didn't find it to be so in Balasag.
Yes, I mean, the question is whether or not it's a material difference, and that's something that the court needs to determine. In that case, apparently the court believed that the size of the person was not such a material difference. But here, and again, also the experiment in the car did not conform to the testimony. I mean, in Balasag, the court said that the testimony regarding the struggle was itself uncontroverted, although whether or not a struggle actually occurred was disputed. But here, The testimony regarding the case, so the reason for the jurors' experiment in the car was to test the testimony regarding the cadence of the gunshots, and there was differing testimony about the cadence of the gunshots, so that the juror concluded that it could not have occurred as Mr. Pope testified based on taking account only of some of the testimony and not all of the testimony. And once the court determines that jury misconduct occurred, prejudice is presumed. The court must be convinced beyond a reasonable doubt that it did not affect the verdict. The court does not look at whether or not it actually did affect the verdict. The court does not consider the jurors' statements about what they actually believed what they actually concluded from the experiments, but rather whether it could have affected the verdict.
Do you argue that there was some prejudice from the incident with regard to the map?
I would concede that there's probably less prejudice from that event, but I do think that it did have some prejudice. I mean, in determining prejudice, the court looks at the purpose of the experiment and also the possible effect of it. Why was the juror checking on that? I mean, it was the juror questioning Mr. Pope's testimony, and she concluded that Mr. Pope was mistaken about which river it was, and came back to the jury room and reported that to the other jurors, and I think that it could have had some effect on their evaluation of his credibility. And also, we are arguing that these three instances of misconduct cumulatively denied Mr. Pope a fair trial, in addition to the instances of prosecutorial misconduct. Altogether, Mr. Pope, his conviction must be reversed, and he's entitled to a new trial. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court, Raul Martinez on behalf of the state of Washington. Affirming Mr. Pope's first-degree assault, drive-by shooting, and unlawful possession of firearm convictions is appropriate here. I'll plan to talk about the juror misconduct claim, since that is what defense is focusing on. We want this court to hold that two of the jury misconduct claims cannot be considered because they're not supported by competent evidence. Gardner and Aliverdi established that hearsay is not competent evidence upon which to base a juror misconduct claim. Here, we only have hearsay statements supporting the shooting reenactment and map inquiry. We don't have any affidavits from the jurors directly involved. We don't know their names. We don't know whether they were even contacted.
In order to be hearsay, it has to be admitted for the truth of the matter asserted, correct?
That is correct.
Okay, and were these statements admitted for the truth of the matter asserted?
They were.
Do we care whether the statements are true or not? Do we care whether or not the juror actually did the reenactment in the truck at home, or whether she told the jury that she did it?
We do care.
Why?
We care because Gardner cares. Gardner says this is a two-step analysis. The first question is you have to determine what type of evidence can be considered, and it said that hearsay statements are.
But I'm asking you. I'm asking you, why is this hearsay?
It's hearsay because it's asserted for the truth of the matter, because there wasn't a juror that was directly involved in the misconduct. If we look at Gardner, and in fact, if we look at the other case that was cited by defense counsel, which I believe was Marks, in both instances, the court had direct testimony from the jurors who were purported to have conducted the misconduct.
Well, that's fine in that case, but that's not what I'm asking you about. I'm asking you about this case.
Yes.
Where what was reported in the jury. The question is whether or not this had any objectively had any impact on the jury's deliberations, correct?
That is the second question.
That is the second question. All right. So if that's the question you want to have an answer to, you don't really care, it seems to me, whether it's true. You just care whether the statement was made and whether it had some impact on the jury.
Well, in order to determine whether or not the statement was made, you need to talk to the juror who purportedly committed the misconduct.
No, I think you just need to talk to the juror who actually heard the statement.
Well, the first allegation that was considered in Gardner is a perfect example. There, the juror said, hey, this guy said X, Y, Z during deliberations. So the judge brought in that juror, and the juror denied ever having said that. So on that basis, the court said, there's no misconduct here. So it shows that the court only considered the juror who was purported to have committed the misconduct.
Let me go to the second part about why it inheres in the verdict.
Absolutely. Under Washington law, jurors are permitted to reenact a witness's account of events to determine the feasibility of their claims and the credibility of their testimony. Balasag is the leading case, and as the court has acknowledged, that case involved average-sized jurors that reenacted a physical struggle described by the 300-pound defendant. Our Supreme Court held it wasn't misconduct for the jury to test the defendant's testimony and self-defense theory. Our case is analogous to Balasag. Our juror sat in her car and reenacted Pope's claim that he was shot at three times, ducked, grabbed a gun from the center console, and shot back four times. She was determining the feasibility of Pope's self-defense claim in light of the sequence and timing of shots heard by witnesses. She was essentially doing exactly what the Balasag jurors were doing. It's immaterial if the juror's car was different in size. And first of all, we don't know what her car was like. There is nothing in the record that establishes that the dimensions weren't the same. It's an assumption made by defense in this case. Even assuming that it was, Balasag, Brown, Corana, Hefner, all those cases held that the absence of exact proportions to aid in the simulation is immaterial because jurors are presumed to have used their common sense and reasoning powers to compensate for the variables.
Was there a description of the dimension of the inside of the Hummer that Mr. Pope was sitting in?
There wasn't, Your Honor, and that's a key point because Balasag actually addressed that point. They said, look, if it was important, if the size of the defendant was important, defense counsel had an opportunity at trial to go into that, to emphasize that it was a pertinent point. They didn't. Therefore, what was pertinent were the body movements involved, and that is exactly what the jurors replicated. It's the exact same thing here. Defense counsel had an opportunity at trial to emphasize whether or not the dimensions of the Hummer were pertinent, whether or not the placement of the gun was pertinent. They didn't. What they emphasized was the body movements. He ducked, he turned, accessed the middle console, turned, and returned fire. And that is exactly what this juror replicated.
Well, with the exception of the seatbelt.
Well, and to that point, the juror's recollection of testimony inheres in the verdict. And I cited a couple cases in my brief that established that point. So the assertion that the juror didn't replicate the shot sequence or his body movements or the seatbelt, that's all stuff that inheres in the verdict. That goes to the juror's recollection. And jurors are not held to an exact standard. We all know that jurors sometimes drop the ball. They're maybe inattentive. They maybe just don't have the greatest memory. But that inheres in the verdict. So that's not something that is material as far as this analysis. With respect to the fact that this occurred outside of jury deliberations, there's no binding authority establishing that jurors are required to cease thinking about the case outside the jury room. To the contrary, there were two cases that I cited, California cases, but in Collins, the juror used a home computer to diagram a bullet trajectory. In Loxley, the juror drove home with one eye closed to test the one-eyed driver's perception ability. The court held that the jurors were not limited to thinking about the case in the deliberation room. So essentially, the arguments here are that it was outside the jury room, that it was inexact, and these cases address that. This case falls squarely within Balasag. As far as the mere reenactment, Pope actually waived this issue on appeal because he conceded at the trial court level that it was proper conduct pursuant to existing case law. And he also conceded that there was no objective evidence that affected the jury's verdict. Now, counsel is trying to circumvent that by asserting an ineffective assistance of counsel claim, but that lacks merit. There is little likelihood an objection would have succeeded given the Balasag, Brown, and Corana decisions that are discussed and cited in my brief. There's also no prejudice because given the substantial evidence of guilt in this case, there's no reasonable probability that a jury would have acquitted Mr. Pope but for the mirror experiment. With respect to the Tacoma River map inquiry, if misconduct is found, great deference is due to the trial court's determination that no prejudice occurred. The trial court's finding...
You would agree that there was misconduct, though, right?
It was consulting extrinsic evidence. I do believe that misconduct occurred in that instance. The material part of Pope's testimony regarding the Tacoma River, however, was that he admitted to throwing the gun in the river. So that's what was at issue there, the fact that he was admitting throwing the gun away. Where he threw the gun was immaterial. It was trivial information, and there's no reasonable possibility that the non-existence of the Tacoma River could have affected the trial outcome. Now, defense has asserted that it affected his credibility, but Mr. Pope testified that he was from California, and a reasonable inference is that the jury just simply thought, well, he's from out of town. He mistakenly called it the Tacoma River. So in that instance, I think it's fairly clear that there was no prejudice with something as trivial as whether or not he got the name of a river wrong, particularly when he's testified that he's from California. I don't have anything further as far as the juror misconduct claim. If the court has any other questions, I'm happy to answer those. Otherwise, I'll just sit down.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, regarding the hearsay argument, the state did not object to the statements from the jurors on the basis of hearsay below. This court should not even reach that issue. But if the court does decide to reach it, we obviously disagree with the state's evaluation of the relevant cases. The cases hold that jurors' out-of-court statements, here it was transcripts of interviews on the telephone with the jurors and an affidavit from one of the jurors. The courts have allowed those the trial court to consider that evidence in terms of whether of the descriptions by those jurors of events that those jurors actually witnessed. So these jurors made statements about conversations in the jury room that those jurors participated in and witnessed. And that is the kind of evidence a trial court is allowed to consider. The trial court's not allowed to consider the aspects of the statements that inhere in the verdict, in other words, the effect of the conversations on that juror's decision and ultimate verdict. In terms of the argument that the recollection of the juror of the testimony inheres in the verdict, I think that that's contrary to Balasag and other cases. Balasag again said that the experiment must conform to the uncontroverted testimony. If there's controverted testimony and the jurors take account only some of it and not others of it and draw a conclusion from an experiment that they conduct, that doesn't, again, that doesn't conform to the testimony, then that's improper. The experiment must be consistent with the evidence. And I'll just note that the state is not relying on any Washington cases that have held that it's okay for the jury or any juror to conduct an experiment outside of the jury room. There are cases from other states, but no Washington case that I'm aware of. And then in terms of the IAC argument in regard to the mirror experiment, the question isn't whether or not the trial court would have granted an objection if one had been raised. If this court determines that it was jury misconduct, then it is ineffective assistance of counsel for counsel not to have raised that issue below. That's deficient performance. And the prejudice, again, is whether or not improper experiment had an effect, possibly had an effect on the jury. And if the court concludes that it did, then that is the prejudice there. Again, we're asking the convictions to be reversed. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.